Hello. Welcome to another episode of Why Didn't They Laugh? A podcast dedicated to jokes. And sometimes when they don't work, you learn a lot from that moment when you're like, why didn't they laugh? And you're like, because it's we're on a boat. I have an unbelievable guest today. Been a fan of this dude for a long time. Matt Besser, who has a stand-up special, Besser Breaks the Record, on CESO.com. That's SEESO.com. Which is an abbreviation for communications. Wow. And he also has his own podcast on Earwolf Network, Improv for Humans. And he is one of the co-founders of UCB. What's up?
Hey, man. I like the premise of your show.
Thanks.
I've been thinking that question's occurred to me a lot lately.
Has there been a situation that kind of confounded you? Were you like, why? And then you couldn't figure it out?
Well, yeah. I mean, I've done stand-up and improv for decades, but lately there's been I think it's a reference thing in particular, and wondering if it's an age gap thing and being frustrated with younger people not knowing information.
Like, what's the reference? I need some deets.
I'll give you an example of one that just happened this last weekend, and this was in a scene I was doing. It wasn't with an audience. I was improvising with, there was a script, but then we were doing some improv on top of the script. Right. And the joke was, I was a redneck who didn't trust hybrid cars. Cause why would God combine two things into one? They should just be born that way. And I'm like, hybrids are always dangerous. My niece choked on a crayon apple, and then I said it rarely ever works. Of course, it worked with Reese's peanut butter cups when that one guy bumped into the other one and his chocolate went into his peanut butter. Now this is the reference that was lost. Now is it lost on you?
No.
You know the ad, right, that I'm talking about?
Yes.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. And in my mind, that's a classic ad.
Yeah.
And I could just see in their faces they had no fucking
idea
what I was talking about. So it was, the director says cut, and I'm like, wait, do you guys not know? That's like the first Reese's ad. Like,
yeah,
one guy runs to another guy. One has a big vat of peanut butter he's walking around town with or something, eating peanut butter.
Yeah, there should be a whole backstory episode on that writer's room.
Yeah. Why was that guy? The guy at chocolate makes sense. People walk around a chocolate bar. Well, why was that guy had an open vat of peanut butter?
And he had five dogs with him and a boner. That's all I can think about with the peanut butter.
Lick off his balls.
Yeah, that's up there with the double mint, or what was the one with the twins?
Twins. Yeah.
Yeah, that's a textbook.
Right. Those are probably, and probably even before your time, but you know them. Like, those are probably started in the late 70s.
Yeah.
But there's things before my time. I know Alice to the Moon. I know things from the Honeymooners or whatever.
You know who Beethoven was.
Right, exactly. So when they don't know that, I get frustrated. I'm like, really? Do I have to? And lately when I've been doing stand-up, I find myself educating the audience before I talk to them about something. Like,
right.
Like I was talking about vape pens the other day.
And you vape, bro?
I do. And
I've been hitting vape Canaveral lately.
Yeah? Yeah?
I'm the vape crusader.
This guy knows.
You get it.
Audiences. And I think we overestimate how many vapers and pot smokers there are. I bet if we went down right now to your improv audience here, I bet less than 10% get high. I bet less than 2% have a vape pen. And I bet one or two people know what wax, crumble, and shatter, all those terms. I'm not sure if you know. Do you know what those are?
You asked me at some of the terms.
Yeah. Right. You have to be into the culture. And so now I'm starting this bit on my vape.
What's crackle?
I don't think I said crackle.
Or no, what was it? You said
crumble.
Crumble.
It's different consistencies of the hash concentrate. So shatter is the one that looks the most liquidy.
Okay.
And then wax is the one that's like, looks like hash basically. And then crumble is a little less than that. And
I'm more of like an Apple customer where I just go in, I'm like, I want energy, and then I also want one full of shit that'll make me sleep. And then they give it to me, and I'm like, sweet. And then I show them my card, and I'm like, California. And then I go
home. But do you do the oil cartridges?
Oil cartridges.
Right. Most people do that.
Yeah.
But I prefer the wax. But I realized...
You're like a Telemark skier. Where you're like, no, it's a black diamond, but it's not, you know, I don't have... my bindings move.
The fact is, most of the people in the dispensary don't even know what the fuck they're talking about. Because if you go in there and you're like... most of the stuff's like a hybrid. It's indica and sativa.
Yeah.
But, you know, like you said, you want to know if it's going to make you sleepy or up.
Yeah.
And they'll just go with whatever they think you want. So
they just size you up.
Yeah. So they'll say, well, you'll say, I want it's hybrid. And I'll go, well, I want something up. Is it sativa dominant? Yeah, it's sativa dominant. It's like, you don't fucking know. And then I get home and it knocks me out immediately.
That's hilarious. So what was, I didn't mean to cut you off. I just got pumped that we were, I started vaping kind of recently because I've never liked smoke.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I never really, I mean, I've like smoked weed, but I always hate I don't like smoke.
Yeah.
And so then someone introduced me to the vape pens and I was like, this is great.
Yeah, it's pretty great.
Yeah, it's like better than Xanax, feels natural, and there's no smoke.
Yeah. There you go.
So happy birthday, America.
But you got this little education for you, though. If you're going to do any of the stuff that's not in the cartridge, the darker it is, the more bad stuff it has in it.
Is this Fox News?
Yeah.
I'm just kidding.
Yeah.
Oh, no, so the darker, the more like tar? Like the more tar?
It's not even tar. It's worse. It's carcinogens.
Oh, no way.
It's the butane that they're making it with.
Oh, that sucks. They ruined it.
Yeah, but if it's white and closer to white, back to Fox News.
It's real good.
It's real good.
White's great.
Yeah.
It's like the polar bear.
Caucasian. It's not the Caucasian.
Polar bears are just so peaceful and happy, and the black bears are always making trouble for the neighbors.
Amen, brother. That's why I stick with grizzlies in between.
You ever watch Animal Planet shit where it does start seeming very color fucked? It's like the polar bear watches his world disappear. Farther south, the black bear makes trouble for his neighbors. Like, it really is like that. It's like the black puma stalks his prey. He snatches a mouse. And then it's like the snow leopard is as elusive as he is graceful. We can barely find him, but he's out there kicking ass. And it's like, here's a black whale, the killer whale.
The zebra, its only problem, it's black stripes.
It's a... It's like the Reese's peanut butter cups. It's like the white horse backed into a black horse. It's a hybrid.
But as I get older, I'm realizing that not all the references are working that I assumed everybody knew all this time.
So what was the vape? Oh, so you'll give a lesson and then you'll do the joke?
Yeah, I have this whole thing on...
That's fucking hilarious.
Well, because I did it without doing it. I'm like, people don't know what the fuck I'm talking about. I'm just... And maybe they shouldn't, or...
Well, I've had to explain irony. I've had to explain that before, where I'm like, what I'm saying is not literal. It's not what I believe. I'm saying it for a different... Like, I've had to, like, explain it to people.
Well, that's a whole other ball of wax, not a crumble wax. But people not getting... Like, I'll do... What I consider on my podcast a persona. Sometimes I'll just get in the same way Howard Stern, who's a hero of mine, he's not really as pissed off about something, or he's not really as pissed at Gary or whatever.
Right.
It's part of the...
Spice in the stew.
Yeah. It's as soon as he's off the air, he's not going to be still yelling at people.
Yeah, like I've never vaped.
Air.
I'm just kidding.
You just made that up.
Yeah,
you
don't even know what I'm talking about. No clue. Vape Canaveral? What the fuck is that?
Just rhymed with Cape Canaveral. You had no idea what I was talking about.
So yeah, so you build up the character and then...
Right, so I'll get pissed off about something on the show, and I'm not doing character, but yet I feel like, isn't it obvious I'm not really this upset? And then people will, whatever, tweet at me or in a message board or something later and go, I can't believe he's such a dick about this. And I'm like, do you not get that I was... fucking with my intern and I wasn't mad at him or I wasn't really upset about that topic.
Yeah.
And there's a level there you're missing.
I think that I don't want to sound like a curmudgeon, but I feel like the younger generation doesn't understand nuance, where it's just like everything is like, they said this is it. It's almost like this weird mild autism where it's like everything is raw data.
I have said that exactly. I said I love the concept of there being an autism scale or spectrum, rather.
Totally.
And I'm like, you can tell how, the more times you've been mad at me on my show, the further up on that spectrum you are of autism. Because you're obviously not getting some clues. I have this guy on, Armin Weitzman. I don't know if you know him. He's kind of a whipping boy of the sketch improv community, but in a good way. He's like, that's his role. It's like
Sammy Davis.
It's like Lou Costello. Or yeah, sure, Sammy Davis. It's like that was his comedic role. You wouldn't afterwards go, Abbott was really mean to Lou. Why are you, stop being so mean to Lou. It's like, that's the fucking joke. And that's, he wants to be.
Stop poking Curly, for Christ's sake.
Exactly. And it's like, he's the Lou of the comedy world, and people will, and I beat up on him really bad. I'll have special episodes where I pretty much just rail on him for an hour. And I think it's funny. And a lot of people do think it's funny, but a lot of people are like, you were really mean to him. And it's like, do you not fucking get that's what he does? That's his role. And he likes being that.
I don't know what they want. Like, it's almost like getting mad at a second act where it's like, and all the tension, a little more than halfway, a little under halfway through the movie. It's it's part of it. Like, you got to have, it can't just be like two roommates who get along every Sunday sitting there.
Well, that's why sitcoms suck so much now. There's no room for to breathe. I blame that on the executives.
Yeah, Dan Lurie has the same opinion. The rapid cutting.
They feel like, there's not a joke right here. It's like, well, maybe that person's being a straight man and reacting to the joke. Well, he needs to say something funny too. And it's like, okay, now we have a world where everybody says snarky, funny things back and forth to each other. And I don't buy into that.
Yeah, those people suck at sex. It's like, everyone's got to be pumping hard all the time.
You got to be coming from minute one for 22 minutes.
Start with doggy, no kissing, doggy, hard pound. It's like that doesn't feel right. That feels like
ruins everything. Back to the generation thing, I think people get a charge out of being self-righteous, out of just being, I've seen an opportunity to be righteous about something. I'm just gonna have a knee-jerk reaction.
And it has the opposite effect. They're creating the vacuum that is Donald Trump now.
Yeah.
Like, it's weird how they don't see it. It's almost like the Treaty of Versailles made Hitler, where you don't see, like, it's like my buddy's a firefighter, where it's like that pullback of the oxygen is, and then it's kaboom. You know, it's like they don't see that this environment is what makes people listen to Donald Trump. And they keep being like, why do people follow him? It's like, because you won't let people breathe.
Yeah, like, I heard your last podcast when you talked about that. I agree with you on that.
Thank you.
I do think that's a big part of it. Like, I detest most of what Trump says, but there are nuggets of truth where I was like, well, I do kind of believe that. I wouldn't put it in that extreme way, but I see how he needs to put it in that extreme way to get the rabble on his side.
If he doesn't get elected, he might be good for the system somehow. Because it's like the system is really corrupt, but it's like hating that doesn't mean you should like that. It's not connected. Mm-hmm. Like, people are so disenfranchised that they're like, well, anything but this bullshit. And then they're like, a wolf? I don't know I did that on my podcast, but I'm trying to work on a bit about that where it's like not even close to what you want.
Yeah.
Like, when he made the reason I got so into it about the word retarded on Twitter tonight is I was saying you can't elect a president who does this. It was a little GIF. Is that what they're called? The GIFs?
Or GIF. Either one.
GIF?
I say GIF, but technically it's GIF now. GIF.
Well, when he's like mocking the cerebral palsy guy, and I was like, this can't be the president. If you like him, you're retarded. And someone was like, interesting choice of the word. And then people started attacking me. I'm like, no, that doesn't have anything to do with Down syndrome. Like, it's just like retarded means like you're not developed. You're not like thinking it through. Uh-huh. And I didn't understand that. It's so ironic that it's like, I couldn't even mock Trump without having that side of politics attack one of my words. It's like,
I guess the logic is that retarded has become, is used as a negative word. So if it's also assigned to a group of people, then it makes it seem like you're judging them.
Right. So. See, that's why I've conceded. I never even used it, but retard to me is an obvious slur. Because it's retard is the other, like, usually if you're going to use the word, it's retard. So retard means you're being a dick. Like, that isn't a great word. But I use the word retarded all the time without ever mentally referencing anyone with special needs. And it's like, I just think that you could call, you could be like, hey, you, and like anything, like, hey, you banana cream would be a bad word in a month. It's like, it's just whatever dickhead is saying. I just don't want to live my life based on like what dickheads are calling a group of people.
There's a few words that I grew up with, which I used all the time. Retard or retarded being one of them.
Yeah.
Pussy being another one, referring to someone who's being a wimp, and calling someone black. And since that time, now you have to say African-American. I split on that because I still think it's silly. I feel like if I'm white, then why can't they be
it's
called
so
black?
Fucking stupid.
And not only that, they're not all from Africa.
The
what
funniest
if,
is that dude
from
played,
Jamaica.
Right. The dude who played Martin Luther King Jr. Everyone's like, the African. I'm like, he's fucking British. Like, the dude's from England. Like, you fucking morons. You can't Google. Like, if you're going to be outraged, just Google what you're outraged about real quick before you fucking embarrass yourself.
Right.
African American. The dude is like, hello. It's like, he's not fucking American. You know what I mean? Like,
pussy. I try to say wussy now because I try to respect the group of people that I'm offending. If they've decided
right.
That's
why I don't drop a hard N. Because I'm like, yeah, this is a bad word. Like, this causes problems.
You just say igger? Is that what you're saying? You just don't say the first letter?
I just say, look at all these, and then I dart my eyes around and then walk away. I'm like, look at all these. And that's it. And then everyone knows what I've met.
Maybe I should just start. You just don't say the first letter. This is so e-tarded.
Exactly.
What an ussy.
Yeah.
I'm not saying that word.
Dude, these fucking niggers. Ruining the world, man.
He's doing a character, folks.
Yeah. Cause
get off your Twitter. He's doing
I mean, he even
changed his voice a little.
Yeah, see what I did? This is the worst time for me personally to be alive because my dad's a rhetoric professor. So it's just the fallacies are fucking everywhere where it's like, you're raised with like, this is symbol and, you know, signifier and all. It's like, and people, their triggers are based on their own personal experience.
Yeah.
And they're projecting what they believe onto everyone else. They're wrong. Like if you go by the, you know, narcissism is not great. It's like, they're all wrong. Because I remember when I was a kid, this is a very intense moment for me. I think I was 10 and someone told a joke about Patrick Ewing sticking his head out of a window and his lips beat him to death. That was a joke.
Oh, boy.
And I laughed. And then someone said, that's racist. And I was like, how the fuck is that racist? Because at that moment, I was like, it's about people with big lips. Like, what are you saying? Like in my mind, I was like, yeah, like Kenny has big lips. Like my white friend has fucking enormous lips. Sicilians, a lot of them have giant lips. It's like, so you're saying black people have big lips? I'm like, in my mind, the joke is about Patrick Ewing has huge lips, not black people have big lips. That right. jump comes from the taboo nature of it.
Mm-hmm.
And the same thing with retarded. I was just reading this book, David and Goliath, Malcolm Gladwell, and like, one out of three CEOs are completely dyslexic. Like they can't read because that it's called a shit. I even wrote it down. Cause this is like one of the most fascinating.
So one out of three executives have never read that book.
Never. No, they don't care because they're literal billionaires and they don't need to just kill time on the bike like me. Desirable difficulties. And, if you think about like anyone who's done anything great, it comes from some sort of lack of something.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like this being so against differences is terrible. You know, I remember one of my favorite Onion articles was Ritalin cures the next Picasso. Like it's never that one. And why do these faggots keep sucking my dick? Those are my two favorite all time because they were so fucking perfectly written. But it's like, what's the cure? Like what's everyone's cure? You know, like I can't spell for shit. That's why I'm so auditory and I can play piano so well. And I'm on the spectrum in some way. And it's like, I want one of these fucking normal people to tell me why I'm retarded.
Uh-huh.
You know what I mean?
I feel comedians were a little more sensitive to all this because I can almost see the argument more for non-comedians of not, you shouldn't use these words.
But yeah, I feel, that's a good point. I totally understand what you're saying.
I feel for us, you got to give comedians more leeway because we are trying to sort out truths of society, and I think, as you said in one of your podcasts I listened to, it's about the context and the intent of what you're saying. And if people are just going to hear the word without the context, just like we were joking around about Iger, and if they're just going to go, "Oh my God, I can't believe you said that," then you're being an idiot,
total idiot. I got an example, and then I have so many questions to ask you.
Okay,
like literally tons, but I was coming in hot today. Okay, I did this joke. This is 1999. This is for my first set I ever did. But so I'm not like polished. But all right, check this out again.
Because, you know, I tried being gay when I was one. You know, I tried it out. I wanted to see if I was gay. I had a relationship with a man. It didn't work out, though. You know, a lot of it had to do with the age difference. You know, I was 8, he was 70. I was an altar boy. We wanted different things out of life. I knew something was up when he said, "Wear a dress, light a candle, and drink some wine." I was on a date. Like,
Okay, that joke at the time made the crowd super uncomfortable because it was kind of riding, when we're talking about riding the wave of like, how far do you push things? You know, like right now it'd be like the Caitlyn issue or anything. Like, my town was riddled with pedophile priests. So I grew up with this, you know, but no one was talking. The story hadn't broken yet. You know, Michael Keaton wasn't upstate New York. But, you know, the Monsignor was a pedophile. Sure. So he would bring in all his buddies who'd keep a secret. So no one was. So I did the joke about it. And people were like, "Oh, that's bad." And then now that joke would be hecky because the wave crested and then pushed forward. And then a lot of the victimization was revealed, and now it would just be almost like you're being a dick picking on all these poor pedophile priests. Whereas back then, no one was admitting it was even happening.
I still do a character based on the Nazi Pope Ratzinger, now the retired Pope.
Yeah.
But I do him as a character, and I was doing him as a character once. And I didn't even have a joke. I was improvising off it, but I was talking about how Hispanic Catholics, and it's true, are even more on the down low than white Catholics.
Yeah.
Because it's a bigger shame in the Hispanic culture to be gay. And I can't remember what my take on it was, but my joke, but I was just in that topic, and this Hispanic dude in the audience threw a fucking chair at me on stage.
Because he probably like shamefully sucked a dick that morning.
Maybe, but it was like, dude, can you not tell that I'm on your side? I'm not really the Nazi Pope. I'm obviously doing this character because I despise the Nazi Pope.
Right.
And I'm talking about something that's just a truth in our society. I'm not, like, I couldn't even tell why he was mad, but just bringing up the whole topic and just enraged him.
Well, he was
him.
Probably a closet. It's like the anger usually comes from some sort of truth nerve.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's what
I stepped on it.
Yeah, he probably just like flipped, like, but that's fine. Like, we shouldn't be dictated by the people throwing chairs.
No, I'll be doing that character at the Sketchfest this weekend.
Yeah, do it. I'm not as good at care. Oh yeah, okay. So UCB, you're part of the people that founded this great institution. You got to walk me through that, because in this book, this Gladwell book, he was talking about the Impressionists, like Monet and all those guys back in France. Mm-hmm. And they were trying to get into the Salon, which was this big institution of art. And it was like Renoir and all these guys. And they were like, fuck that. And they started doing their own thing in like some, like, I think it was a furniture store or some kind of like just random gallery that they just started their own thing. Mm-hmm. And they calculated that from their first showing, the paintings today would be worth $1 billion. And it's just interesting how they thought, like, are we going, like, can we just do our thing? And I've always had a lot of respect for that, especially in comedy, because comedy can be so like rapper like where it's like my premise, my joke, you know. And it's like to become part of a community that pushes all of you forward, and I just find that amazing.
Yeah.
Because usually that's when things really start cooking, is when you and like-minded people really just start working together without a lot of ego.
Yeah, I've done stand-up, and I started doing stand-up before I did improv and moved to Chicago. But start off in the Chicago scene, which was very supportive scene, probably still is. But when we, as the UCB, moved to New York to showcase for the express purpose of selling our show to Comedy Central, there was no such thing as comedy theaters. That didn't exist.
Right.
It was just stand-up clubs. So we were at Catch a Rising Star, the improv. We were at the comic strip. We were doing sketch at stand-up clubs, and we were treated like such fucking shit at all those clubs because, one, we were just different, and two, we were a pain in their ass because a stand-up just has to step in front of the mic, whereas we're like, all right, you got to black us out at this point and then play this Led Zeppelin cue and then I'm going to pull out a gun and then a blood pack's going to go off and all this stuff. And they were just such douchebags to us and let us know how in the way we were and how much trouble we were.
Jesus.
That's really what started the theater. Like a lot of people were like, so you moved to New York to start the theater? Like, no, we didn't. We're comedians. We didn't want to start a theater.
It's a necessity.
It was a necessity. It was like we were sick of the being hassled every time we performed like we were a bunch of assholes. So that's really what started it. And then it was other people want to learn how to do this improv and hey, these people are talented too. They should put on a show too. And then one thing led to another. So it was never
skilled
really
improv is the best possible thing to see live.
Yeah.
I fucking love it.
Yeah.
Like when you just see people gelling, you're just like, but like, it's probably the same as stand up because the other side is so bad.
Oh, yeah. Bad improv is terrible.
Terrible.
Well, I talk about this all the time, how I hate short-form improv. I think it's corny. I hate a lot of bad improv because it just looks like children playing around and being delighted with themselves. And
it's so masturbatory.
And every time I see that, I'm like, oh, I hate this because this audience is going to think that this is what all improv is. And you'll hear, you know, stand-ups or other people all the time go, I hate improv. It's like, look, motherfucker, there's good improv and there's bad improv. Don't just kill a whole genre because of one show you saw in college.
I've told crowds that before. I'm like, you guys got to laugh at the right points because I don't want you to think that this is okay, what you're doing. I'm like, I don't want you guys to walk out and be like, that's how comedy crowds act.
Like,
so we got to get it together because I'd be doing you all a disservice if I said that this is how you should be.
Do you do this? I go up when I'm doing stand up and I will focus on who hates me the most in the audience.
Oh, yeah.
I will single out that dude. I will look directly at him. I'll give him a few of my bits. And if he's still crossing his arms and frowning, I will attack him. I'll say, what's up, man? And I'll work him and either he'll start laughing or I'll make him feel bad. And I do not give a shit.
Yeah. You just smell weakness. Cause a lot of weakness is masked in aggression. You know, when that person's like, I won't laugh. It's like, what's your weak spot?
Yeah. Motherfucker. Why didn't you come here tonight?
Do you ever feel like we have to be dictators to like really small drunk countries? Like where you have to be like, this is what happens. Like sometimes ever since I've been a professional comedian, like sometimes I'll see like, this is going to sound fucking terrible. I know that sounds terrible, but I'll like on CNN, it'll be like some dictator move. And I'm like, I get that. Like, is he going to make it seem like that's okay to like try a coup? Like everyone dies. I don't see how people don't understand that.
I was doing a show, just a show in a bar in New York. Whatever, 15 years ago. And I was doing a kind of Andy Kaufman-esque kind of bit. My bit was in the middle of my act. I was like, you know what? I wasn't able to eat before I got on stage tonight. So if you don't mind, I'm just going to eat some chips real quick. And the bit became me just eating chips really loudly over the mic. And most of the audience thought it was funny and got it. And there was this one woman, and the way for it to work was you had to hear the chips and how loud and gross it is to hear that.
Yeah.
This one woman hearing a pause in the action in her head or something starts telling a story to her friend at the table. We were at the store today. And I was like, in my head going, is she fucking, she's ruining my bit now.
Right.
Because everyone can hear her over what I'm doing right now.
Right.
And like I said, it was a bar, so it wasn't that big of a room. But she wasn't right in front of me. I'd say she was a good, let's say 20 yards away. You yeah. know? Okay. I threw my chips at her thinking the physics of it was just going to have the chips just kind of explode up in the air.
Yeah.
I didn't know, but it was probably the best toss of my life, and it hit her square in the face. And I felt immediately bad just to physically hit a patron and a lady at that. But at the same time, just had a feeling of being, as you say, a dictator of like, she fucking deserved that punishment.
That's what happens. What was her reaction?
They got up and left, and instead of me, and the big problem with that is I've now shit on the stage for every comic that's going to follow me. You know, I've created a horrible vibe in the room, but what I just was seeing red. And I followed her as far as the mic cord would go out of the bar, and it did stretch outside the front door of the bar. So I'm yelling at her over the mic as she's walking down the street. It was one of my more shameful stand-up
No,
memories.
I like that. It's not bad to follow that. I actually like it. It's almost like your Uncle Jesse at that point. Like when one comic has a spiral, I love following that because then you're like, hey, guys. And then you like just... Like they're almost like looking for like not a chip in the face. So if you just like go the other route, it's like they're just like, oh, sweet.
Yeah. At worst, I'm not going to hit you with chips in the face.
I slapped a dude in the face once on stage.
Really?
Not hard, but he was on his phone and I just like went up and I just kind of smacked him a little bit. And it was like really funny. Thank God. Cause it's also assault.
Right.
But it got a laugh. Because it was just kind of like, I was like, hey, 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 hey. And I just treated him like a dog. It wasn't like I was trying to hurt him. I was like trying to train him a little.
Yeah.
But I've had some spirals. I've never had anything to throw.
I've walked in my Chicago days. When I started, they don't really do it this way anymore, I don't think. But it was the opener does 15, the middle does 30, and the headliner does 45.
Yeah.
And I was always the opener. And that was the problem because the opener was the least experienced. And in a way, he should be the most experienced.
Absolutely.
Because he's warming the crowd up and he's setting the table.
Yeah.
And I was also a bit of, my act was a bit of, like I said, more Andy Kaufman, Steve Martin, and not something you want to start any show with.
Right. You're not reading announcements and talking about what cars double parked.
Right. You want the more odd act to be, you know,
headliner.
Like, well, if people are fans, but if he's a nobody like I was, you probably want him like third or fourth in a 10-person lineup, not opening in a 3-person lineup. So I walked the room several times, especially on road gigs. I remember walking an entire room, like the entire room.
What'd
left.
You say?
I can't even remember. I just had a crazy act and people were just like, get me the fuck out of here.
Do you think genre starters, like you guys were like genre starters, like the seriously, like you guys had the shit that you faced from owners being like, you know, the Zeppelin cues and everything. You're starting something new. Do you think you get a little of that Pound Dog PTSD vibe from that?
Oh,
where you're a little like, you have a little bit of that, like motherfuckers want to come at me.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Well, there was the Luna Lounge. I don't know if you've heard about it, but that was kind of the place. Mark Maron talks about it a lot on his podcast, but that's where a lot of that whole scene started in New York. And Maron in particular had a big chip on his shoulder about us, and we had a big chip on our shoulder about him. And we came to town, and we would walk into those rooms like treating everyone like the enemy. And it wasn't that way in Chicago. It was a much more supportive environment.
Yeah.
But it was like, it was a killer environment those days in New York. It was like, not only are you going on stage to entertain the audience, you're going on stage to prove to every other act on that bill that you deserve to be there.
Yeah, it was like 8 Mile.
Yeah, it was.
That's awesome. How do you feel the alt scene has changed over the years? Like, what have you seen happen with that type of vibe?
Well, the alt scene became the scene.
I mean, I know. That was an interesting transition.
It's just so much of it now, you can't really, like, you consider, and also comedians are doing more what I'd consider mainstream humor on an alt room. So I really don't consider alt rooms have alt comedians. You know what I mean? Like, I think you can see an alternative comedian downstairs here at the Improv as much as you can at our theater. Whereas it used to be like everyone was trying to do something different, or if you were in that alt room back in the day.
Yeah, because Sandler was an alt comic. I mean, he was singing songs to like conditioner on stage and walking rooms.
Yeah.
It's interesting how people, it's like, what does alt even mean? Does that just mean underdressed? Like, not to be a dick, but like, what does it mean? Like, you wear a hoodie? Like,
right.
Because it's like, I get alt. Like,
well, I remember the first time I saw Janine Garofalo on MTV's Half Hour, I think it was called. It was one of the first stand-up shows I ever saw. And she really stuck out. And like, I think she influenced a lot of people that came up in my generation. We saw her and went, oh, she has a different attitude. And this was, you know, I started right there at the end of the 80s boom, where everyone was trying to be Seinfeld, you know. And when you weren't trying to do that kind of Seinfeld observational humor, you really stuck out. And I think she was one of the first ones I saw where I was like, wow, she's just talking in a different rhythm and doesn't come off so desperate and comes off a little more real. And there's something about her that I think influenced a lot of people.
Yeah, that you could have like a layered act.
Mm-hmm.
That it wasn't just like, and this is another joke.
Right.
It was like, there's like, I thought Galifianakis was the best at that. Like, just those tones that he would hit where you're just crying laughing.
Yeah.
And he just looked like angry, but I don't know. It's just like, that wasn't common back then.
Yeah, I saw Zach beginning. He started at the Luna Lounge pretty much.
Yeah, you've seen a lot of shit. Can you just tell me things that I don't know? Isn't it weird how someone has a vast amount of knowledge, you don't even know what to ask because they know more shit?
Start from the beginning.
Yeah, like, just tell me things. I don't know.
tell me about the
cosmos.
That's how I had our mentors, this guy, Del Close. He pretty much started the kind of improv we did. And every time he'd tell a story, it was like, you know, I was in a strip bar watching Lenny Bruce, and Lenny Bruce has this famous bit he does where the main character is named Frank Dell, and I had been a Lenny Bruce fan, so I knew this. And he was like, and I was sitting next to my friend Frank, I forget what his name was, and Lenny just looked up there and said, this guy, Frank Dell, and that became the character's name.
That's
in his
awesome.
Bit. Yeah. It's like, really, Lenny Bruce? Fucking A.
Yeah, Lenny Bruce is sharp, and then he did a lot of heroin. Like, yeah. I love that he, like, it's almost like you educating the crowd when, like, a judge or someone would read the shit he said, and he was like, the timing's fucking wrong. Like, it was like, can you imagine the hell of someone just transcribing a joke? It's like, why did the chicken cross the road to get to the other side? It's like, that doesn't make any sense.
Oh, yeah. I know what you're talking
about.
It's
like, knock, knock, who's there? Impatient cow who?
His final days was him just reading his fucking court. He would just, or what happened, the transcripts of what happened at court. And it was just sad. Just, he'd get up there and just read transcripts.
Yeah, people get obsessed with injustices. But I don't think it's like...
You're going to start reading your retard tweets, man.
I'm just going to read them. I'm just going to be like, what does that mean if you feel this way? Yeah, I just, I love words. And I just think that the more you limit words without the intention of hate, the more fucked you are. With the exception of a couple. Hard ends.
I don't like that, though. When Michael Richards did his thing, and I don't think I'm getting this wrong, but Jamie Masada said no one could say the N-word anymore at the Laugh Factory at that point.
I've said it on stage.
Well, this was directly after that when it happened. He banned it, and from my memory, I think it was like one of the weigh-ins. maybe it was Damon, immediately, like 3 days later, said it like 100 times and paid the fine, whatever it was, per inward. But like we were saying earlier, it's context. I don't think any, if you say you can't say the N-word, then why can't you say the F-word being faggot? Why is that word so much? I don't get why that word's worse than faggot. I just don't. So I don't, well, then we got to ban that word too. Okay. Then do we have to ban the C word, cunt, you know? Where does it stop?
If we ban cunt, I have no act. I mean, I literally have 5 minutes, maybe. Yeah, if I'm doing a corporate, I have 1 minute. I say hi.
And I've never in my life ever seen any comedian use the N-word on stage.
That's white? Well, I'll tell you the context I did.
That's in a negative way.
No, it wasn't negative.
Right.
It was... I've told the story before. I followed Roy Wood Jr. for 3 years on stage. Like I was on a show, sitcom on TBS called Sullivan and Son.
Mm-hmm.
And so we'd all tour as a group. And I was an Asian guy, an Arab guy, white guy, black guy, and all very strong comics. And Metamed, Steve Byrne, Roy Wood Jr. And Roy's closing joke for the first 2 year, no, a year and a half was brilliant. It's one of my favorite jokes. He would go, he goes, gay people get shit done. He goes, because they attack with compassion. He's like, don't call us that. Fuck that. You know, he might have, I don't think he said fuck that, but he's like, black people, he goes, there's 30 words you can't call gay people. You can't even say gay. Give me the chips, you gay ass machine. It's like, go see Sylvia in HR. This is a long thing. He goes, black people have been working on one word, the N-word, since 1908. We can't get rid of one motherfucking word. So we got to start calling gay people niggas. And explosion, hilarious. And then I'd go up on stage, and my opening joke would be about, like, it's traffic, dumb white. So one day I just go, man, I love that joke. I wish I wrote that joke. Can you imagine if my punchline was, we got to start calling gay people niggers? And just pause, huge laugh. Blacker the crowd, the bigger the laugh. Because it's like, you know what I said wasn't hateful. You know I'm not allowed to say that because of my skin color. You know that's called racism. I'm fucking Rosa Parks. Now who wants to talk about the fucking horn on a car for 10 minutes? Because that's what I'm allowed to fucking talk about.
Right.
And so, I almost went off the Lenny Bruce end on that one. But then I just was like, it's fine.
I've heard faggot used a lot in a negative way, though.
Really?
In stand-up clips.
Oh, I never hear that. I never...
Not recently, but I through the years,
Especially black comics.
Yeah.
Like they'd be like, motherfucking faggot, try to suck my... It's like, Jesus, guy.
Yeah, and that's...
You're like, you
that's,
just got to the table in the 60s, guy.
That's hateful. That's not...
It's hateful. It's not ironic.
Yeah, that's not using it with a funny voice pretending to be a redneck.
No, it's not Galifianakis, who is... what was it? The homophobe with a lisp. Why do these faggots keep sucking my dick? Or was that? No, what was this? Or no, let's go kill some faggots. Like, that's funny. It's an irony. That's when you got to teach a crowd what an irony is, when the actual definition is the opposite of the literal one. But
and you're being more liberal than they are, and they don't even realize it.
That's the funniest part. I had a situation in Seattle where I was doing a bit about how arrogant white English culture is. I'm like, what are Japanese people called? And some fucking white bitch goes, Japanese people? I'm like, what do they call themselves? It's like, she was making it seem like I was this bigot fuck. And I'm like, they don't call themselves Japanese people. Japan isn't Japan. It's like napalm or some shit. And the whole joke was how we just keep renaming fucking countries where it's like, España, you're being a real Spain in the ass. Spain, you know, it's fucking Deutschland, Germany. Like, we're just picking shit. And she proved the point with her indignation towards me, where it was like...
She wanted to get that little righteous adrenaline shot into her system.
Yeah, because it was real Asian heavy, the crowd.
Mm-hmm.
So I was really playing up a lot of Asian humor, and like, she was trying to get some fucking points. And I was like, listen, bitch, I Wikipedia everything. Like, I Google.
You can feel Yahoo. You can feel that city to city. How uptight they might be about certain things.
Yeah.
Like Seattle or San Francisco.
Asians, I feel bad for Asians, man. They get like, they just get shit on. You can do Asian joke. Well, no, I don't feel bad because I think everyone should be able to have what people do about Asians, but it's like anything goes with Asian. You know, you can make fun of their dicks or their driving or all these fucking stereotypes. No one cares. You say the word black, everyone's asshole just puckers. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, don't say that. Don't say it's like, did you hear what we just said about Asian people?
Right.
Like, is it not equal? Is it not? I mean, because they were in fucking Japanese people were in internment camps in the 40s. Like, when I talk fucking length of time.
How come no one is upset? There's no. Maybe this isn't true. And as I say it, it's not true.
This podcast is all about not caring if things are true.
But how many Asian people got nominated for an Oscar? How many Hispanic people? By the way,
no one over 6'4 has ever won an Oscar. I'm 6'7. I am the ultimate fucking marginalized group. No one over 6'4. There's been two people 6'4. Tim Robbins and John Wayne are the only two people in history that have ever won an Oscar at that height.
Wow.
At my height.
You must get some newsletter with these facts.
No, I literally goofed because it's like that for so many things. No Nobel Prize winner, none. Emmy, except for if Brad Garrett got one, that's it.
This is what happens because I'm 6'2", so I relate to this a little bit.
Yeah, okay, 6'2". 9 Oscars minimum. Uh-huh. 15. 15.
But when you do auditions, listeners, if you do certain auditions, they'll go, how tall are you? And you know, as soon as they ask that, you're fucked. Because, like, if you've ever done a Tom Cruise movie, you're always asked how tall you are. Because at some point, you're going to have to stand next to him and make him look weird.
Yeah. No, literally, I tell that to, like, there'll be people at the improv bar. They're like, I didn't get it because I'm Hispanic. I'm like, I look like another species of human. Like when someone's like, oh, we're going to pay this dude $9 million and we're going to hire a fucking White Walker north of the wall to play his fucking brother who's a foot and an inch taller than him. Like the average actor's 5'6".
You have to tie tennis shoes to your knees and
yeah, literally
dwarf it.
Dude, I got a dwarf it.
See, that's a reference that me and your listeners are like, what the fuck's he talking about? Tim Conway's classic dwarf series. Do you know what I'm talking about?
I don't. I thought you were talking. What is that?
You know Tim Conway is, right?
Yeah.
From Carol Burnett Show. Yeah. He had this whole series where...
I thought you were referring to Stephen Dorff.
Uh-uh. He had a character called... I'm pretty sure. Are you looking this up? Dorff.
Like Dorff on Golf is one of the great...
Yeah, Dorff on Golf, where he probably started on the Carol Burnett Show, but he would tie tennis shoes to his knees so he looked like a little person or whatever. I remember he had a whole video series.
That's awesome.
Of him doing that. Yeah.
See, that's another one. I'll go with whatever they tell me they want to be called, but I have too many contradictions in that one. I have little people, friends that say midget's the way to go. That's mm-hmm. what they want. And others are like, that's like a hard N.
Yeah.
And it's like, so what the fuck? I'm trying to work
little person sounds more.
Tom Cruise is a little person.
Sounds more insulting for some reason.
Yeah. Like.
I'm not a person. I'm a little person.
Yeah, you're a tiny little man. Like, that sounds way worse.
I know.
Just the title midget or dwarf. Dwarf sounds like you're from Zelda.
And I don't even know the difference between those, so.
A little person.
I just try not to say any of it.
Hey, little man. I just, like, who cares? Like, people, that's all people give a shit about anymore. I know it's elevated in the comedy world because we have to deal with it so much, but, like, if you go to any news website, one out of four articles is like, did you hear what this person said? It's like, fucking live your life. Was that, is that a little person thing?
Is that off, Harvey Korman, probably?
Yeah, I don't think people, left-handed people, most oppressed people in the world.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, they die three years younger than non-left-handed people.
Really?
Yeah.
I've never heard that.
Yeah. Dude, I mean, even fucking notebooks are against them.
That's true.
Yeah.
But not sports. Sports are good for them.
Well, it depends on the sport.
Yeah, I guess so.
I mean, left-handed people have it bad.
How do guitars work for him?
Ask Hendrix, man. 27, he died. Left-handed. You know, it's like high fives are really awkward. Shaking hands, awkward. Everything's awkward for these dudes. Calligraphy is fucked up.
I know. I'm so awesome at calligraphy because I have my writing. I'm right-handed.
I'm ambidextrous.
Are you for real?
No. I just wanted to
jack off both hands.
No, I switch up sometimes.
Yeah.
Not anymore. I think
left
I used
hand
to.
Feels like a stranger.
No, I just get tired. Sometimes you get a burn when you're doing one of those long, like, milk jerks where it's like it's not even about finishing. Where it's more just about learning about a new category. And it goes way too long, and it's not even sexual anymore, and you just want to fucking die.
I've done the same grip my entire life. And,
really?
And then I've seen...
Innovator of comedy doesn't switch up a grip when he whacks.
Well, like, you see the guys in the porns, and they have this weird... I can't even describe it. This weird cock to their hand that they do, where I'm like, I've never even thought of doing that. And even seeing you do it doesn't make me want to try that. But why the fuck are you doing that? Why is that different than how I do it?
Yeah, like, what do they know that we don't?
Yeah.
Like, it's like, where'd that corkscrew thing. Yeah, they do a weird thumb thing. It's like they do this, like, I never even thought about that. They do like a thumb thing where they put the thumb over the you know what the fuck I'm talking about.
I'm laughing, yeah.
Like, none of them jerk like men. We're just trying to get, you know, just fucking...
Or are they men and we're not? Like, I'm like, oh, that's the right way to do it, huh? That makes it feel more like a vagina, huh?
Yeah, I don't... Yeah. That's next level shit. I feel like that whole world is, like, so exposed to sex that they're... Like, the back of the ball shot? Like, no one likes that. And in porn, they show that shit all the time. Just the slapping...
Yeah, I don't like that.
I feel like that's next level. Like, you have to watch thousands of hours of sex as a job to like that shot.
Where do you get waxed as a man for those porns?
Waxed?
Yeah, they're fucking all pubeless these days.
I feel like at that level, they self-wax.
They just know how to do it.
Yeah, it's like a violinist with resin on the bow. It's like, I got it.
They don't have to go to the Korean place.
They don't need a squire. There's swordsmen that do not need a squire. They're like, I got the fucking thing. Yeah, porn's a whole... I mean, this is the thing about porn, is the comments are much more positive than the YouTube comments. You ever look at porn comments? I try to do like a study on it.
I'm usually filled with shame at that point, turning off the computer.
But have you ever just like looked at the comments?
They're all positive.
Super positive. They're not even chauvinistic. It's like, what great people. Like, it's not. And then you go on YouTube and it's just like, faggot Obama. And you're like, what is this? And it's just a kid playing piano. And it's like, I don't know what it is about it. Is it the community is stronger? Because it's still, we're talking 70 million views on some of these. And it's still like positive. It's not trolls.
Yeah, they're just very appreciative and thankful and like towards our comedy clips.
Yeah, comedy fans are just like, someone already, Dane did it already. And you're like, it's not even close to the same joke. And you go, and it's like brunette fucks cock. And it's like, she's really like a great person.
I gotta say, I've checked out 4chan on occasion, and the comments on that
4chan?
Are 4chan.
What's 4chan?
You guys know 4chan, right?
You're opening up a big Pandora's box for Owen.
What is it?
It's, you don't want to go
there.
Is
it porn?
Yeah. No. It's pictures, but it's just depraved.
What is it?
Early internet community similar to like...
Like Persian Kitty? Remember that way in like...
Troublemakers.
Like, you guys are speaking in riddles.
It's just depraved people. It's like, it makes you feel, even going there, like you'll go there tonight, just fucking
it's
put
like
in
McDonald's.
4chan.
It's like McDonald's?
No, McDonald's is the Vatican compared to what goes
so
on.
So 4chan
there.
Is like, when give you, me an example.
When you, it's nothing you haven't seen, but it's more like the way people talk on there. You're like, ugh,
oh,
get
really?
Me out of here. Oh my God. It's where fucking rapists and pedophiles must hang out.
I don't want to hang there. I don't want to hang at 4chan.
But it just makes you hate humanity.
Maybe 2chan. Take it down a couple notches. That's why I'm here all week.
Work this into your Asian
material.
Yeah,
I'm going to do that in Seattle.
What's your name? 4chan? Some people laugh at that.
Be like, I'm sure there's going to be a lot of comments about rape about her. It's like, what? So people just go in there and they just say crazy shit?
It's not that, even saying rape is a little off. It's just, I don't read the comments, actually, when I go to whatever, YouPorn. Like, I'm just watching the video and I'm out of there, you know? But on 4chan, it's just like when I do a picnic, lots of talk, like a picture and then just lots of talk about it to where you're like, ooh, I don't want to share.
It's like dirty Facebook.
Yeah. I don't want to share thoughts with all you depraved people. I'm out of here.
I'm obviously going to check it out. So are people like
angry?
It's
not just porn. It's anime and just every weird subculture.
And people are negative, though? They're negative?
No, not necessarily. They're positive, but positive in a real perverted way that makes you feel like, oh, I've the most perverted I've been, I don't even touch what these guys are into.
I almost, like, I'm having a harder time watching porn ever since I saw Call Me Lucky, that documentary.
Yeah, I saw that too.
That it was so good. And it's so made me
talk about porn much.
No, but it was that one scene with that woman who was talking about, I can't explain it. There's just something about that movie that made me like look at porn stars and be like, fuck, were these people like molested?
Oh yeah.
You know, it's like when you, that movie fucked with me. Well, like I was bawling.
He says that Barry Crimmins, for your listeners don't know, he's a stand up from Boston. Who,
yeah.
Sexually molested when he was just a boy, and in the early days of AOL, he let people know there's fucking pedophiles in these AOL chat rooms trading child porn. You guys aren't doing anything about it,
and they're making millions of dollars on it.
It was crazy, and he really was a champion, and he made AOL look really stupid in the process.
Oh, that Senate scene?
That was the best.
Yeah, because comics will just dismantle congressmen and congresswomen.
Yeah, just imagine a comic with a kind of a Bill Maher encyclopedic knowledge of a subject going up against a smooth AOL executive who thinks he can charm everybody and just isn't winning because it just doesn't have the facts.
Right. And also just the crowd control of it. It was almost like he treated them like a heckler.
Yeah.
Where it's like, no, you know your play. Like he alpha'd everybody.
Yeah, it was great.
And it was like that the guy had like shoes more expensive than his education. That was one of the lines in it. And by the end he just had him in his hand. Because he was for the side of pedophiles. Like it's like
we've taken care of those problems. We've addressed those issues. Really? Because I was on it today and I saw something and I informed you guys about this last week and got no response. He was just cutting
it. It's like, so you believe that this is okay. Like you believe in your community that, and it's
we're addressing. No, you're not.
You're not. And he's just like, children are being assaulted. Like, do you think that is unbelievable? But the best part is how it was directed. I thought Bobcat just crushed it because it wasn't about rape. It was just his life. Like until like halfway through the movie, I didn't even see that coming. It was like, it's this very interesting guy at the heart of Boston comedy, like wrestling his demons and making it work, being from upstate New York near where I'm from. And I was like, this guy's a champ. You know, he did comedy in like Nicaragua for like the rebels and shit. He's like,
that was crazy.
Yeah. And then all out of nowhere, this side of him's revealed. And then it becomes this like blockbuster movie story of like taking down big business.
He made me feel stupid. And I'm sure a lot of standups will watch that and go, my comedy seems so vacuous after watching the kind of topics that this guy talks about.
But he bordered on like TED Talks.
Yeah.
It almost was like, it was almost like how you guys were doing your own thing. He was almost like doing TED Talks before TED Talks.
Well, like I was talking about educating the audience. That would be 90% of his act.
Did you see that one where he tried to do one joke? They didn't laugh. And he just goes, okay, there are three branches of government. Like he just went right into a fucking lesson. It was just, he couldn't stop pointing out the hypocrisy of shit. And then now to see his crowds, like he's doing the best he's ever done. Like people now are coming out and paying tickets and it's just fucking great. He just faced his shit.
He's a hero for sure.
Yeah, I don't know what he's like in Perth. I've never met him. I heard him on Rogan. Seems pretty intense. Really cool.
Yeah, I guess Bobcat is a play on his nickname Bearcat. That's where Bobcat came from.
I like Bearcat. If you were a bear, what kind of bear would you be?
Oh no, you're gonna make me say black bear because I don't want to offend anybody.
No, you can say koala.
Oh, that's true. I don't know. What would I be? Black bear, polar bear.
Are you black bear? You can be a black bear.
Well, I don't like Ole Miss, and they're the Black Bears. So but I'm not going to do
Kodiak?
That. Probably Grizzly, just so I could get in Revenant.
Yeah.
Attack Leonardo.
What, have you seen that movie?
I have. Have you?
No, is it good?
It's 2 hours good, but it's a three-hour movie. It's, after a while, you're like, I get it. It's cold.
I know. Really, my brother watched it, and he was like, it fucking sucked. I was like, why? He goes, it was just like our life. Because we're from like a very tundra part of New York. Yeah. And my brother like cuts down trees for a living. Mm. So he's like, he's just limping around the fucking wilderness.
Well, it's almost a comedy because the premise is all these trappers would go deep into the Colorado mountains where all these wild bear and the most ruthless of Native Americans were, see, I didn't say Indians, were living and just against them. And it was all about bringing some fucking pelts over the fucking mountain. It's like, were pelts really worth that much? Do you go through all that trouble?
Yeah.
Just to have a burlap jacket, my friend.
That's not really stakes that we relate to.
Not at all.
It's like, and he risked his life. Is it for love? For freedom, pelts.
It's like, yeah, it would have made more sense. Just it was a real story, so it can't make more sense. But
by the way, how crazy is it the commitment to Indian? Like that was a fuck up that someone stuck with for like 500 years.
Yeah,
they're like,
no,
it's fucking
this is India.
It's like it's definitely not India. It's like, oh, it's all up to the Indians. It's like that was just such like you got the wrong address or like you like the surface streets would take you 20 minutes. 3 hours on a highway, it's provable.
Yeah.
And you're like, no, it's the highway, it's their move. It's like, they did it for 500 years.
Yeah.
Of like, this is fucking India.
My daughter, my 2.5-year-old is in school now. And I'm starting to hear this. You have a kid, right?
No, my wife's pregnant, March.
Okay, well, you'll start to hear this. They can't sit a certain way. Kids naturally sit with their legs splayed like this.
Yeah.
And it's not good for their, it's if fucks up your legs, I guess.
To sit like that?
Yeah. So they'll say crisscross applesauce. And that means do it Indian style. That's what I grew up with.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what Indian style is, right?
Of course.
All right. Well, Reese's commercial, but
anything, I was like, anything what are they really talking? Racist I grew up with.
What are they talking about? Crisscross applesauce. It took me a while to even know what the fuck they're, my wife yelling at my daughter, crisscross applesauce. What, Indian style?
What about Indian?
We don't say that anymore. It's crisscross applesauce.
What about Indian givers is like the last thing that it was. It was like they took everything from them and they called them Indian givers.
Indian giver is when someone gives you something and you give it to someone else.
No,
you give it back to them.
That's re-gifting.
Take it back.
They take it back. It's like if he just gave me his beer and then he came over and took it back.
Right.
That's Indian givers.
Because they took territories back.
Because, yeah, I mean,
I don't even get it.
It's like, it's because they didn't have a concept of land ownership. But if
right.
you just look big picture, they got everything taken from the, right. like Indian givers. That makes no fucking sense. Because most of the treaties.
And now what do we call it? Now that that's not cool anymore.
I don't know. There's no new pejorative.
Native American givers.
Native American givers. That's fucking hilarious. Yeah, what is it now? Are you Googling?
I'm trying, yeah.
Because that, it just doesn't even. Yeah, because that was the biggest part with like treaties, why they would never work, is because a lot of tribes didn't even have a concept of it. You know, like who are the ones in the Southwest? Navajos? Is that it? Well, they had to like raid. That was like what they did. That's how you became a man.
In Revenant, it's the Sioux and the Pawnee are the two big ones in that movie.
Yeah, they don't respect lines in the sand.
Uh-huh.
They're like, we go where the fucking buffalo go.
Yeah.
And you would, if you're smart, you would too. They're like, no, this is Oklahoma. They're like, but the buffalo are now in Kansas, bitch. And then things escalated.
Don't call me bitch.
Any other knowledge you want to impart on me?
I don't know. You'd have to point me in a direction.
Let me think. What do you think is the, What's the craziest situation you've been on stage and managed to get out of? Was it the chips? Because I feel like that's pretty intense.
Well, the guy throwing a chair at me did scare me because he was a big guy and I thought he was going to kick my ass. Oh, I got a good one. The UCB was doing a, not Live Aid. What was the comic relief? Yep. That was the one with Whoopi Goldberg.
Yeah. Right?
Yep. And they were, and besides the giant concerts, they would do smaller kind of concerts to raise money. And the UCB did one of those. And what was our bit? I can't even remember what the bit was, but we went on stage and I'm pretty sure Amy was in a wheelchair in the bit. And whatever the bit was, when she rolled out in the wheelchair and was obviously someone who didn't require a wheelchair, and this was a charity organization for people who were in wheelchairs, people were immediately offended by us and hissing us.
Right.
And we were just going to commit and do the however long it was, our 7-minute bit. But my thing was, I was dressed as a dinosaur. And I had this dinosaur mask on, whereas they were just humans and whatever. And I remember being inside my dinosaur mask and feeling kind of protected because no one could see my face. And the rest of UCB said the whole time my face was like tremoring because I was laughing so hard at how bad we were bombing. You could just see this dinosaur head jiggling up and down because I was just delighted at how hard we were bombing and I didn't have to be seen, whereas they were.
What was the premise of the sketch?
I can't remember at all. Oh, I remember the punchline was bloody baboon AIDS cum.
Nice. So hacky. I've heard that so many times. Such an obvious
and
premise.
In the alt room, that'd be like, that is delightfully offensive. And in this room, it was like, that's offensive.
Yeah.
Boo, get off stage.
Like, my father died of baboon AIDS gum. That's not fucking cool. How do you go off, like, the thing that would, how do you get better at improv? I've always wanted to know that. Like, how do you work on it? Because it seems like it's the spontaneity of it. Like, how do you practice non-practice?
Well, that's the difference between stand-up and improv, that I was a stand-up first, and I moved to Chicago because there was like 8 clubs in the city when I moved there. And I went and saw an improv show, and it just so happened Chris Farley was in that group, Tim Meadows, Dave Koechner, and they were all nobodies at that point, like myself. And they killed. It was a fucking amazing show.
Yeah.
Took one word for half hour, improvised 9 to 12 scenes, had it connect at the end. There was a song in the middle of it. After the show, I went up to one of them and I made two mistakes. One was I went, the fat guy won, right? He was the winner, right? And they were like, there's no winner. He might have been the funniest, but
right,
there's no winner. And then I was like, all right, level with me.
You're like, says the loser.
Yeah. And I was like, you guys wrote some of that though, right? Like, especially that song, because you guys just all started singing that chorus at the same time. And they're like, no. I'm like, come on, man. I do stand up. Just tell me. They're like, no, man. There's this method. And that's when I knew I had to do. I was like, you're telling me that there's a way to do that where it seems like you're coming up with that. Right?
How do you do it?
Sign up for class at the UCB, I guess.
Dude, I legit will. I'm fascinated.
But there is a methodology, and it took me 2 years of taking classes at 3 different schools to where I was like, and I can remember the day that it hit me. I'm like, oh my God, I finally fucking get it.
So just give me a sliver of it.
I'll only have one. We have this thing called finding the game of the scene. And if you think of any sketch you like, there's only really one thing funny about the scene, and that's the game of the scene. And that thing gets heightened and explored. That absurdity, there's just one absurdity that just becomes more and more absurd as the scene goes on. But a lot of beginners think, I'm just going to go up on stage and say funny, weird stuff. And if you have a bunch of things that are funny for different reasons in the same scene becomes a mess. We call it going to crazy town. It just becomes crazy and wacky.
No root.
And like I was talking about earlier, to me, it just looks like children being silly. And,
right.
I don't enjoy that. I want something. What we've always said is at the end of a good improv scene, you should be able to write it up or at least find a nugget of it to write up, and that'll become a solid sketch. Because a lot of people say, improv, you do it and then it goes away and never be seen again. And I feel like that's kind of loser mentality. I feel like if it's good enough, it should be like stand up. You should be able to, you know, you improvise something on stage and you're like, yeah, hey, there was something there. I'm going to think about that some more and then try something a little bit more the next night. Some of it fails, some of it does good. You leave what fails, you pursue what did good, and you polish it again.
Yeah.
The difference between stand up and improv is when you're doing stand up, you're in your own, you're only talking to yourself in your own head. You don't have to communicate to someone else what your intentions are. And you can't write on stage and go, hey, let's do this next. So there's different methods to clue each other in of this is what the subtext is, hey, my improv friend, this is what I find funny from that opening we did. Let's pursue this. So there's different ways to give each other clues of like, this is what I want to pursue. And if I'm going to give a person that clue, I have to make everything else normal. We call it the base reality and playing at the top of your intelligence. It means a lot of people think playing at the top of your intelligence means being throwing out smart references and stuff. What it really means is be yourself. Don't be crazy. Just react to the absurdity the way you would if that happened in your real life.
Right.
Like a common beginner mistake is like someone will draw a gun and no one will react. It's like, really? Is that how, wouldn't you react if someone drew a gun in real life and pointed it at you?
Right.
Or would you say something wacky to them? And I don't respect the scenes that say something wacky. I want to see the scenes that really react the way you react. That way, when we see the absurdity, we can notice it and then we'll pursue that absurdity rather than just saying every funny thing or crazy thing that pops into our head and just doing something that's just crazy.
Yeah, because if it's rooted, then everything becomes, well, you don't have to like think about it.
Yeah.
But the equation is set up, so it's just like a ratio.
And it is an equation, kind of.
Yeah.
It's called, a lot of people think, yes and is the phrase that gets attached to improv a lot, which really just means agree on a premise together. But our school says, really, it's about if then. If this unusual thing is true, then what else is true? If you think about a lot of stand-up is that way too. You're like, well, if this is supposedly true, then wouldn't that mean that this is true too? So you do if then too.
So do you have to break up the then? Because sometimes like the jarring juxtaposition can create a laugh. So if it's like if someone has a train, like a linear train, how do you like change it to make that like laugh?
If I understand you, you don't want to just be, break it up apropos of nothing. Like
right,
to me,
there's a reason.
Well, that's absurdity. And that, and that laugh peters out and, there's nothing to build on. So hopefully we're recognizing some truth in society, some observation, like the show I do, Improv for Humans, will start with, give us a suggestion. And then we don't just launch to a scene. Someone will tell a story. Well, that makes me think of this. If they're telling a story, that means that's a memory. If it's a memory, that means it's something interesting from their life or it wouldn't have stuck around in the brain. So if it's something interesting from life, why is that interesting? Is there something funny about that? So we're taking truth, real life observations, just like stand up.
Yeah.
And then we're, expounding on that and say, well, that's a funny little absurdity to life. Let's heighten that. Let's see where it goes. Let's pursue that in the scene.
How do you know who's taking the control of the scene?
If you're doing what I'm talking about, there's different kinds of improv. If you're doing premise improv, like I'm talking about, it's the first person to step out and initiate. So the first initiation, in my first line, I'm going to communicate to the other person who, what, where. Who I am, where we are, what we're doing, and what I thought was funny from the opening.
Okay.
Right? So if this show was the opening and I stepped out and I made myself, All right, children, step this way. The next animal at the zoo. So right away, I've told you, your children, I'm a tour guide. We're at the zoo. I'm giving you a tour. So that's the who, what, and the where.
Yeah.
You'll see the zebra, which unfortunately is not a pure white horse. But so now we know, oh, he's commenting on that thing we were talking about earlier.
Right.
Of the black versus white animal. So you would go, oh, I know where he's coming from. We already brought up the humor kind of thing. And that's what we're going to pursue in this scene.
Yeah, like the unintentional racist animal guy.
Right.
And so does the next person pick who they're going to be? Or do they just kind of...
Well, I told them that they were children. So
everybody's now the kid.
First person.
Oh, okay.
And a lot of people say, well, aren't you just writing the scene? I'm like, nope, I'm just pushing us down a path. I'm like saying, let's go down this path. And you can choose what your child's point of view is. Like, are you going to be the liberal child? Are you going to be the racist child? Are you going to be the teacher as being kind of straight person and interacting with the tour guide,
right,
telling me to calm down? Or there's different ways we can pursue that scene. But I presented in my first line something funny from real life, and we know where that came from and how we can pursue that.
Like, having this set of skills, is conversation ever boring for you now? Were you like just talking to someone and you're like, there's so many places you can go with this?
Well, I talk about how you're at a party and like you're in a circle and people are trading stories.
Yeah.
And like it's like, oh yeah, once I got pulled over by the cops and I had to go through this. Oh yeah. One time I got pulled over by the cops and they made me empty my box. Oh yeah, and then one person goes, oh yeah, I saw this cop movie where the guy, and then everyone's looking at him like, just because it has cop in it, we're telling getting pulled over stories.
Yeah, like you don't have to chime in.
Right, and then they're telling a story about a good cop movie. And it's like, do you not get that that's not what train we're on now?
It's very musical improv.
Yeah, I guess so.
It's almost like you set a baseline and then let people like go.
Yeah, I don't know anything about jazz, but I don't know how to do it or anything like that. But it would be like in jazz.
Oh, you know how to do it.
It'd be like in jazz if
we're
you
doing
had
it right
if
now.
You had on earphones and you didn't listen to the other instruments, and you just started playing. It'd be like, do you not hear that we got some groove that you're supposed to play off of instead of just completely doing your own thing?
Yeah, it's like when comics will like tank and come out stage and be like, fucking crushed. You're like, did you not hear that? Like, do you really think that was good? Like, and then they'll do the same set over and over again with no improvements whatsoever. And you're like, I pine over jokes to do better than that. Like,
how did that comic get to that point where they're in the show to begin with?
I don't know. I don't know how it all works. I truly don't. You know, sometimes it's the only industry that's like that. Like, you're never watching a football game and one running back runs like a 7 second 40. And you're like, how the fuck did they get on the team? It's like, if you're not running a 4.240, you're done. It's like comedy is one of those things where it's like, this person's really bad. Like, why does he keep getting shows? And they're just like, oh, I don't know, man. It just is. It's like, no one's like, there's no other professional like that where it's like, the floors are really dirty. Why is this janitor keep getting all the shifts? It's like, he just has this thing about him. It's like, oh, not cleaning the fucking floor? He has no skill set.
Yeah, at least in acting, you can go, oh, well, he can't act, but I can see he's good looking, so that's why he got it.
Or he made a choice. Or he's under 6'7".
That's what it is. Those damn little people are everyone under 6'7" to you. Like, I'm a little person.
Yeah. Yeah, but 6'2 is like the best height you can possibly be as a male. 5'10 to 6'2.
I'm surprised you
maybe
laughed
6'3.
At that Patrick Ewing joke, knowing he's one of your people.
What, big lipped?
Yeah.
I got big lips. My wife tells me to have big old plump lips. No, I think tall people relate to black people a lot. Because, like, I've been fucking spot lit by a helicopter twice because I fit a fucking description. People are just scared of people that they think have a big dick. Even if it's a myth.
I heard you say in your last podcast, women are coming up to you saying, do you have a big dick?
Yeah.
That sounds like a come on. That sounds like the most, your hotel room.
The most insulting part is it's a lot of times it isn't. It's just like, let me see your dick, fucking gorilla.
Oh, Jesus.
And you're like, all right. And then
I've never had that problem.
The chick's husband's like, Debbie's drunk again. Like, I'm sorry. And it's like,
again.
Yeah, it's always like they're trying to fuck it.
She'll be on 4chan tonight if you want to check it out.
It's never about them being attracted. It's about them trying to piss off their husbands. And the husband's had such a good time, they're not going to get mad anyway. But it's like, let me see your dick. And then they kind of look at Chad. And Chad's like, sorry about her. It's like she's trying to say, like, give me attention. It's fucking bullshit. It's fine.
Hey, Chad, control your lady.
Hey, Chad, control the woman. The only heckers I ever get are female. Men never heckle me. It's always women. And it's like once a show, someone just yells something insane. I'm still trying to figure out the gender, like why. I have no fucking idea.
Hmm.
Do you have any ideas?
No, because I get both genders.
Really? It's like if a chick is just like, you're not like, fuck you. Like, no guy does that. It's always a drunk, hammered chick.
Mm.
Do you think it's because women are smaller, so alcohol fucks them up more?
Oh, that's definitely impossible. But come on, you've seen male hecklers.
When I was I was a heckler at a Renaissance fair. Yeah, people fucking pelted me in the face with tomatoes, mostly men. But they'll be not really. I mean, I almost got the shit beat out of me at the ice house by a dude who just got out of prison. That was really scary. He was like, I go, so who's seen 50 Shades of Grey? And a dude just goes, none of us has seen it. And I'm like, if then, you know, I start going down this fucking rabbit hole. Before you know it, my at the time girlfriend, I can see her. She's just like, looks like really scared. But I couldn't stop because I'm a dictator.
Yeah.
It's like, I can't let them take me down. And no. It got fucked up. But typically dudes don't heckle me. I don't know why. I wish they did.
Because they are afraid you're going to fight them.
But I'm not like tough. I'm not like this.
But you're 6'7".
No, bro. But it's like Joe Rogan, I understand if it's like, because that dude's like a lethal killing machine. I am not a killing machine.
Right. You just pointed to maybe the biggest guy that does stand up though.
Yeah, but I'm also proportional, so for more than 10 feet away I look 5'8". But that's another set of problems. You know what I'm saying? How long this is a good one. Wow, that's on our fucking long side. Is there anything else you want to talk about?
This is good, man. Thanks for having me on. Bester Breaks a Record on CISO, folks.
Yeah, and then Improv for Humans
with
the number 4.
That's right.
Yeah, because that's important.
4chan. Improv 4chan humans.
Improv 4chan. And if you go on 4chan, don't just masturbate. Tell me what you think about it. What do I have to fucking... What month is this? January? Okay, I'll be at La Jolla Comedy Club this weekend, Friday and Saturday. I'm hosting the Art Director Guild Awards on Sunday... Or no, that's the end of the month. Week after Skagit Casino. Sounds like a slur, not
yeah,
real
they
name.
They don't like to be called ska, gay ska guys, is yeah, that what you're saying?
Yeah, gay ska. If you like ska and seeing a man whack off with a weird thumb thing over his hammer, you're in the right place. So Skagit Casino in Washington State. And then Sunday, Art Director Guild Awards. And then February, first weekend, House of Comedy Phoenix. Last weekend, Tampa Improv. And then March, I am welcoming my child into this world. Do you have any advice for me about being a father?
Have you done the Lamaze classes, all the breathing classes? Have you done that?
No.
Are you going to do it at a hospital?
Yeah.
Okay, that's good. All you have to do...
I got an app and shit. I've been like really researching as much as I can.
There's so much they tell you to do, which is like all that breathe, and... Once she gets there, she's just going to be in pain. There's nothing you can do about it.
And she's a warrior. She'll fucking crush it.
But if there's C-section, like it seems that's a 50-50 chance these days.
Especially the fact that she bred with the dragon.
There you go.
But she's a Hispanic engineer, which is basically like an improv person in the 80s. Like she's got strength. So
But if you get there, my friend, this is real advice. You got... you got to, because she's going to have basically her insides placed on her, taken out.
I heard about that.
And put on her stomach, and she won't see it.
It's horrifying.
You don't want to see it either.
I'm not, yeah.
You're going to be behind her head, and you're going to be whispering in her ear, and you got to take her to another place.
Totally.
You got to take her to some green field in her mind or something.
I will. I'll just tell her stories. I'll bring books. She reads constantly.
Because that's a fucking scary moment.
Yeah, but what if I just look down and go, see, I told you, you don't have a heart.
No jokes. That's when you got to keep the irony.
No irony.
Aside.
Another
thing
like,
was,
good night, Moon.
Come up with a playlist of songs while she's for the hospital. And I had, that was like what I worked on for 2 months. I was like, it's not going to be about the songs I like. I'm just going to focus on songs she likes and everything's really mellow. And I had all these CDs and I get there and they didn't have a fucking CD player. It was all MP3.
That's hilarious.
Put it in the pawn station. I was like, motherfucker. And then when we had the C-section, our doctor put in his iPod, and I was like, really? You get to do this?
Yeah.
And that band Plain White Tees, I don't know if you know them.
Jesus.
Oh, no.
Hey there, Delilah.
Oh, no.
Comes on while my wife's getting her fucking insides taken out. I'm like, I would not have chosen this pop punk song for this moment.
Be like, is that DJ Tiesto or DJ D-Testo? That one's on the house. Yeah. All right, so get good music, no CDs. Breathe. If they take her insides out, do not reference them.
No. Take her away, and you shouldn't look at them either. She'll see it reflected in your face.
Yeah, she'll see me more sexually excited than she's ever seen me. Because I'm a serial killer.
Side.
No, that would be fucking scary as shit. I don't want her to have a C-section.
It's good odds, my friend, I'm afraid to say.
Really?
Yeah.
See, my mom is such like an earthy, hippie person that she's like really against them.
Oh, yeah.
But then again, she was born in 1942. So she was against a lot of things.
They're supposed to be 10 inches dilated. I don't know if you've heard that number yet. When it's ready for the baby to come out. My wife was screaming bloody murder at 3 a.m. at our house. Like, woke up.
It's going to be insane.
Like, screaming. And one, I was upset my neighbors didn't call the cops. Because if she's getting murdered, that's what it would have sounded like.
Right.
Got her in the car.
It's like, where were you guys?
Drove her to the hospital. And they tell you, don't even come till you think you're near 10 inches. I'm not sure how you're supposed to know that, but I guess gauging your pain. When we get there, she was 1 inch dilated.
Oh, man.
She had 9 inches to go. So I was like, well, this ain't going to happen. This baby ain't coming out.
Did she get an epidural?
Hell yeah.
Yeah, Amy's going to get an epidural.
Oh, yeah, you got to.
The epidural's the move. And I'm just going to vape.
Yeah, don't listen to the hippies.
Yeah, I'm going to get, I'm trying to think of more vape puns. I'm going to get a Vapricot and eat it. That's some scotch vape.
Vape Crusader? I don't know.
Yeah, I did Vape Crusader. Do you got any vape puns? I mean, I got really nothing.
I didn't work on them, no. Vape Fear.
Yeah, that's a great one. Vape Fear. Statutory vape.
Yeah, I'll start using the Vape Fear to my audience. So you guys got the Vape Fear. Let me break it down for you.
Vape.
What's that?
The Great Escape. The Great Vape.
I thought you were referencing the Great Ape, another 70s cartoon.
Yeah,
reference.
Great Ape. Great Ape. Vape. Welsh's Vape Soda. All right, this is ending on a real low note, and I started it. You can email me, whydidn'tthelaugh@gmail.com. Go to my website, owenbenjamin.com, if you want to request original songs. Just got to tip me. I don't care how big or small. It doesn't matter. Just don't make me fuck for free. I think that's it. Subscribe to this shit, comment on it, and what else? Anything else happening? I don't even... watch 60 Minutes 7 Days, and I'm coming out with a new one called The Pursuit of Happiness. It sounds intense, and it will be. So go fuck yourself, America and Britain. Do I have any listeners in Zimbabwe? If so, write me and tell me how it's going. Yeah, just write me shit. I get fucking bored and I love reading it. All right, peace.